Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this episode of the Horsemanship Journey Podcast. My name is Shane Jacob, your host, and I thank you for taking your time to be with us today. Today, I am very proud to present Rhonda Britton. Rhonda is an Emmy Award winner, a repeat Oprah guest, a master coach. This lady has changed lives. She's been in over 600 episodes of reality TV. She's authored bestsellers, including Fearless Living, which I will make a side note to that I recently purchased and have been listening to the audio book, and I highly recommend it. This book was translated into 16 languages. She founded the Fearless Living Institute, the home of Fearless Living Life Coach Certification Program, is considered the Ivy League of life coach training. She's been read, heard, and watched by millions, coached tens of thousands of clients, and trained hundreds of coaches. I can't really say enough, but I'm going to stop it here. We're proud to be able to hear what she has to share with us today on the Horsemanship Journey Podcast. Rhonda, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us.
My pleasure. I'm very excited. I don't frequently get to be interviewed with a man with a cowboy hat, so that's very nice. You know, it's like very nice. Very nice indeed.
Awesome. So I have to tell you, when I was first introduced to you online, I was guided to a YouTube video that you were interviewed on. It'll come to me, the name of it. But anyway, I guess the name of it's not important. What's important is I heard your story. Your story as a young 14-year-old girl. This video was about a 60-minute video, and I intended to watch it for about 2 minutes. And about 45 minutes, I realized that my jaw had not, I'm just like taken in. I was taken aback. That was a better way to describe it. So I guess I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind, for any listeners who may have not know you before, just put us into context of
sure
your story the way you'd like.
Sure, I appreciate that. And I'm really excited that you found yourself caught up in 45 minutes. That's good news. Thank you for that. Well, you're referring to the worst day of my life. And I do believe that the worst day of our lives, like the most horrific days, the toughest days, the days that we wish we never had to live through, actually carry the seeds of our destiny. And we don't see that for maybe years, maybe decades. But when we have hindsight, when we can see our pattern of our life and the unfoldment of it, we all of a sudden look back and go, wow, that moment, that day actually had everything to do with where I am today. And that's how I feel when I look back at my life. So what you're referring to is when I was 14 years old. I grew up in a little tiny, tiny town in Upper Michigan, 365 inches of snow. It snowed pretty much from October, early November to May. I was actually home last year in May, and it was snowing in May. So just so you get a full view of how much it snows. And there weren't really any restaurants. We had no fast food, nothing like that. We only had two restaurants, Big Boy and Douglas House Buffet Hotel. And my parents had recently separated. And so my dad was living with his mother, and it was Father's Day. So my father was coming over to take us all out for Sunday brunch, which was a big deal because we didn't go out to eat. And so my mom's fluffing up her beehive hairdo, and she's putting on her blue eyeshadow and her rose colored lipstick. And my sisters are fighting it out in our one bathroom. And my dad walks in the back door. Come on, girls, let's go, let's go, let's go. And me and my mother start walking towards my father. And he notices as we're walking outside, my sister's still in the bathroom fighting it out. My father notices it's starting to rain. So he says he's got to get his coat from the car. Now, this coat is a tan Naugahyde leisure suit coat, which is, as you know, we're old enough to remember, those were good looking. Those were really hot. So he's grabbing his coat. As he opens his trunk, he's going to grab his coat. But instead of grabbing his coat, I noticed he's grabbed a gun. And he starts yelling at my mother, "You made me do this. You made me do this." And he fires. Now I start yelling, "Dad, what are you doing? Stop, Dad, what are you doing? Stop." And he takes the gun, he cocks it, points it at me, and I believe 100% that I'm next. He blinks, I blink, he blinks, I blink, and we're frozen, just blinking and staring at each other for, it felt like forever. I'm sure it was just a few seconds. And then my mother, who already has one bullet inside her, notices what's happening and yells out literally with her last breath, "No, don't." And my father, realizing my mother is still alive, takes that bullet intended for me and shoots my mother a second time. And that bullet goes through her abdomen, out her back, and lands in the car horn. And for the next 20 minutes, all I hear is, and then my father cocks the gun one more time, puts it to his head, and fires. So in a matter of less than 2 minutes, I was the sole witness of watching my father murder my mother and commit suicide. Now, I don't know how anybody else would react, but this is how I reacted. I blamed myself because I was the only one out there that physically could have stopped it. I was the only one that could have done anything. And I didn't do anything heroic. I didn't jump in front of my mother. I didn't kick his shins. I didn't grab the gun. I did nothing heroic. And so for the next 20 years, I basically split into two, the inside round and the outside round. The outside round, it was, I'm fine. Everything's fine. I did really good in school. I kept going good in school. I got straight A's, class president, got full ride to college. But on the inside, no self-worth, not good enough. Always wondering when the next shoe was going to drop. I didn't have any rights. I didn't save my mother. And when you don't save your mother, you don't get to be happy. So I lived this two worlds, you know, pretending on the outside and loathing on the inside. And what happened for me is I eventually went to college, and in college I found alcohol, and that numbed me. And that was a great anesthetic, right? Like I kept me pretending everything's fine, helped my outside pretend. So I became an alcoholic. I ended up getting 3 DUIs, ended up trying to kill myself 3 times. And it really was that third suicide when I found myself alive and I wasn't happy about that, that I realized I'm not very good at killing myself, not skilled at that, but there must be a reason why I'm alive. There must be a reason I'm here, because I'm trying to kill myself. I do not want to be here. And why am I staying? Right. And when you try to kill yourself 3 times, they do put you in a psychiatric ward for evaluation. So I was evaluated, deemed not crazy. They let me out. And I remember going back to my little studio apartment and just saying to myself, I have to start over because I've tried everything. Those years in between my parents' death and my third suicide attempt, I went to therapy. I went to workshops. I read books. I was very knowledgeable about spirituality, about personal development, about leadership. I read all those books. I took all those workshops. I did inner child work. I did shaman work. I did everything, energy work. And so I had a lot of tools, but nothing took away the feeling of not being good enough. There's something fundamentally wrong with me. And so that day that I was released from the psychiatric ward and sent back home, I'm like, I have to start over. I just have to start over. So I remember thinking, what do kindergartners do? What do kindergartners do? Well, kindergartners do gold stars and a calendar. So I actually went to the store, got some gold stars and a calendar. And for the next 30 days, I still have this calendar, by the way, I put a gold star on any time I did anything worth living for, anything worth keeping myself alive for, anything at all, any change at all. And I'm talking about getting angry and not breaking something. That's the level I was at, right? Just the bare minimum of, am I worth saving? Am I worth living? And at the end of 30 days, I had a calendar filled with gold stars, and I had hope. I had hope that maybe I didn't have to live under the weight of my parents' murder-suicide, because I believed that my past was who I was. I didn't know how to separate that from myself. I know I heard when I read the books, they say you are not your past, but come on now. I really believed that I was my past, and I really believed that I didn't deserve happiness or anything, you know, substantially wonderful in my life because I didn't save my mother. So that was the beginning of my journey of changing my life.
You know, what you just said right there, thank you for sharing that. That I think what you just said right there is that you didn't know that you could separate who you were. And I mean,
yeah.
I I believe that we're just going along, right? We're just going
That's right.
along. Nobody
That's
really
right.
tells us that, you know, all of the input that we're getting in here is who we are. It's our reality. And a lot of times we're not really even aware that that's what we are. But and then maybe one day that we recognize it. But the question is okay, I'm a combination of everything that has happened to me.
That's
right. And then try to break that apart. And then what? I mean, tell me more about
You're asking such a great question, because you're really asking the crux question that stops people from moving forward. That is brilliant, because that is the moment. Okay, so yeah, so I get that I'm my past. I get that I'm all these things. Okay, so what? Right? Well, on one hand, you're more than that, as we all know from a spiritual place. If you believe in something bigger than us, you're more than that. But also, what you think you are, who you think you are, is not who you are at all. Because what we do is we adopt things from everybody around us, right? We take on things. We take things that feel comfortable. We take things that we learned. We take those behaviors and those beliefs and everything. And that's who we think we are. But what we can do is, if we decide, we have to decide, we have to make a choice to become aware of who am I really, actually asking ourselves. And this is what I did, actually. This is one of the very first things I did after this awakening, after the gold stars, is I started realizing I didn't know who I was, just like we're talking about. I didn't know who I was. Who was I? Okay. Everybody's like, oh, you know, you're bigger than that. Well, okay, then who am I? And so I started asking myself, literally, and I'm not joking, if I picked up this cup, I would ask myself, do I like this cup? Do I like this cup? Wait, do I like what's in this cup? I was so used to living on autopilot. My favorite color was green. And you know whose favorite color was green? My boyfriend in kindergarten's color was green. He liked green. And I just picked it up and I said, I like green too. And I never changed it, right? For decades. And then my ex-husband's favorite food was Mexican. Well, that was my favorite food. And I didn't know I was doing that. I wasn't purposely being a chameleon, right? I wasn't purposely doing this. But that is how we survive in the world. When we're in survival mode, we just pick things up in order to keep ourselves safe. So knowing that my husband's favorite food was Mexican, well, then whenever he wanted to eat, I just have to say Mexican, you know, Mexican. And he'd be like, yeah, right? I didn't know that I was, I mean, I knew logically I was, logically, obviously I knew, but I didn't know what I wanted, what I needed, what I felt without the influence of others. And I'll even say this, people who think they do are even doing it, right? Because I didn't know that I was afraid. I never said I was afraid. I'm Finnish. I grew up in Upper Michigan. We don't feel, I didn't think I was afraid. So I didn't know I was afraid. I didn't know that I was picking things up from other people and just turning them into myself. I thought, if you would have asked me, I thought I was, you know, I'm amazing. I'm individual. I can do my own thing. No, I was a accumulation of all the things that I'd experienced. And oh, by the way, now they know that fear is handed down through our DNA. So I'm also all the fears of my ancestors that weren't healed. So all the unhealed parts and all the healed parts is what I picked up. So it's actually slowing down. There's a phrase that I say is slow is the new fast. To slow down, to really, really ask yourself, is this how I feel? Is this what I need? Is this what I want? Is this important to me, really? And we have to be willing to be wrong about everything to find the right life for us. We have to be willing to be wrong about everything in order to find the right life for us. So slowing down, that question that you asked is so pivotal. Because that's where people stop. I can't change, or I tried to change and it didn't work, or et cetera, whatever they say.
There's two things. They're two bigger things to say at once, but I'm going to do it anyway. There's two things
you go
that are coming to me. And that is that just the idea, I mean, that I have to realize that I can, it's my choice. I mean, I have to really take that in to be able to even know, because
that's right.
I think, well, I'm this way. Well, of course I'm this way. This is who I am. And so that's one thing. But and the other thing that was coming to me in this listening to you is this, the, if you were to ask, and you're well aware of this because you list that as something that you talk about, is if you were to ask probably 10 people, you know, if they have fears, most people would be like, not me.
Right?
Tell me about that. I mean, what are we thinking when we're thinking? I mean, what's going on here?
We literally are not educated about fear. We aren't aware of it. We haven't had classes on emotional management. We don't understand how fear works. I mean, even after my parents died, I didn't think I was afraid, right? I didn't think I was afraid ever. And so the fact that I work with fear is so hysterical to me, because it's like such an irony. Like, what am I doing talking about fear when I never thought I had it? So what I do now is I actually pull out my book when I give a talk, and we're going to do it right now. And if you're listening to us or watching us right now, if you're able to shut your eyes, do it. If you're not, that's okay. If you're driving, please don't. And then I want you to nod your head if you do any of these things and feel any of these things, because I'm going to go and answer Shane's question, but a little backwards. So let me ask you, nod your head if you do any of these things or feel any things. Do you ever deny yourself? Do you ever isolate yourself? Do you ever pretend everything's okay when it's not? Do you ever hide out? Do you ever whine? Do you ever settle? Do you ever compare? Do you ever manipulate secretly? Do you ever get defensive? Do you ever judge? How about complain? What about procrastinate? Worry? Do you ever feel like you're struggling? Do you try to get control? Blame? Do you ever feel bitter? Do you ever feel powerless? Do you ever feel dissatisfied? Resentful? Do you ever feel entitled? Do you get irritated, like maybe now, reading these words? Do you ever feel indifferent? Overwhelmed? What about ignored? What about self-pity? Or what about annoyed? And what about feeling like a victim? So go ahead and open your eyes. And I read these words, you know, and I would dare say everybody has over 50%. What do you think? What percentage do you have, Shane? What do you think?
I'd say about 80%.
Great. Perfect. Truth teller. Thank you. So when I give a talk, I always say over 50, everybody raises their hand. Over 75, everybody raises their hand. Every 80 over, everybody raises their hand. And then maybe 90, 99% of the room raises their hand, right? And then when I get up to 100, probably 98% of the room raises their hand. And these are what I call fear responses, Shane. We do not get overwhelmed unless we have a fear ignited. We do not procrastinate unless we have a fear ignited. We don't want to control things unless we have a fear ignited. We don't get overwhelmed. So we have all of these fear responses that are caused by what I call the wheel of fear. And it is that thing that is invisible. Nobody ever told us about it. And it is part of our neurobiology. We can't get rid of it. And it activates when we are in a new situation, in an uncomfortable situation, or even thinking of one. We don't even have to be in the situation. We could be thinking about the situation, or we could see the situation, and we could get activated. So these are fear responses. So when I give this quiz out, I say, okay, if you do any of these things,
you have fear, period. So you have fear. So this is how you start identifying what when you are afraid. Is not like, do I feel afraid? No, because you probably won't feel that. But you probably know when you feel anxious. You probably know when you're procrastinating. So then we're going to work backwards into that wheel of fear, because everybody has what I call that core fear. And that core fear blooms, let's use this as a flower, a plant. The core fear is that root. And you, as a human being, every human being, we find fear responses that work for us, right? The overwhelm, the procrastination, the people pleasing, whatever it is. And those work for us. We don't like it sometimes, but they keep us safe, because fear only wants to keep us safe and alive. And then we go to procrastination school or perfectionist school or complaining school, and we learn not to do that. Well, fear doesn't care. Fear doesn't care. It will just pop up another one. It'll just pop up another fear response. It could care less if you quit procrastinating, because it's got overwhelm over here and it's got a back pocket, or it's got, you know, anxiety or something, right? It's got something else in its back pocket that's going to pull out. And that's why we feel you know, when I ask people, do you feel like you thought you solved this and it comes back around again and again? Well, it's because fear is going to keep using the things that work in order to keep you physically safe, because fear only cares about keeping you alive. It does not care about your happiness. It does not care about your joy. It does not care about your purpose. It does not care that you, you know, live this great life. It doesn't care. And fear knows everything you know. It knows everything spiritually, intellectually, education, knowledge, your history. It knows everything you know, and it can use everything against you to keep you stuck, safe, and the same.
So you, in your own, back to your story, you learn, you see your own fear.
Yeah.
And you learn so much. I mean, you are, you are like an authority on fear. And, you know, I hear sometimes, you know, I'm just going to bring this up. People talk about this and that and credentials and this and that. And I think that credentials have a place. They do. They set the standards for certain things and this and that and the other. So do results. I mean, results, in my opinion, are credentials. And based on results and experience, you are surely an authority on fear. So you recognize this, you break it down, you see it, and then and you look back and you see how you, what you did with your own fear.
That's right.
And then, so just tell us more about, okay, I can see 80% of these things. So I mean, okay, I'm with you. I'm in.
You're with me. Okay, like Rhonda, what's next? Right? What's next? Right?
I'm not really liking them, but I mean, they're there. But so tell me more.
Yeah. So for the sake of simplicity, there's a wheel of fear. So when you're activated in the fear responses, when you're doing a fear response, you are on what I call the wheel of fear. Now, you are not on your wheel of fear all the time. There's probably lots of places in your life and lots of relationships in your life where you're fearless. And when you are being true to yourself and living that fearless life, you are on what I call the wheel of freedom. So everybody, you know, we're not afraid all the time, right? A lot of people are afraid at work, but not afraid in their relationships. Other people have fear in their relationships and not at work, right? Some people have stuff about their family. Some people don't. So it's not like you're afraid or not afraid. It's not black or white. It's you might have, you know, three areas of your life where you are really frustrated and not satisfied and really, really want to change those areas. Well, there's probably fear on patrol there, right? So you have an experience of living on your wheel of freedom already. You already have one. You just may not be able to identify it. And then you have experiences on your wheel of fear. So the wheel of fear has four components. The first component is that core fear. What is that core fear? And that, Shane, is the hardest to discover, because fear, because it knows you so well, it doesn't want to get discovered, because once you see it, then the gig is up, so to speak, right? The gig is up. Like, fear can't trick you anymore. Fear can't get you believing in the lies it tells you. It can't keep saying, well, you don't have any self-worth. You know, you just don't have enough confidence for that. Oh, you know, you're just, look at you, you're just so anxious. I mean, you're just a procrastinator. You don't believe the lies anymore. You slice through the illusion of all those lies. And so you see it, and you don't beat yourself up anymore for damn sure. And you don't blame yourself, and you don't shame yourself, and you don't feel, you know, you don't feel all those feelings that keep you frustrated, depressed, upset, feeling less than, not good enough in any way, shape, or form. So we got the core fear, which is the invisible part that nobody can find, but I did find it and created exercises to help you do it. And then we move into, I'll use mine as an example. So my core fear is loser. Now, Shane, I was a straight A student, got a full ride to college, was class president, went to state for track. I mean, am I real? No, I was never called a loser in my life. Even when I was drinking, I wasn't called a loser, right? Because again, I looked good. I had it all together on the outside, right? So when people say to me, oh, I know my core fear, it's stupid. My parents called me stupid. Oh, trust me, that is not your wheel of fear. It is way smarter than that. So mine is loser. Now, I could be in a room, I could be in my own thoughts, I could be watching something, and that loser is invisibly and quickly ignited. How do I know that? Well, in the beginning, I only knew it because I was doing a fear response. I was overwhelmed, or I was, if you're afraid to be a loser, a fear response might be bragging, or it might be giving unrealistic deadlines, right? It might be giving too much in order to prove your worth, right? So all these little things that we unconsciously do really quick, right? Those fear responses, those are activated. Now, we're all old enough. We know what our fear responses are. This is not a secret. We know what we wish we didn't do anymore. So then we go, oh, I can't stand. Why am I doing this? I know better than this, right? Which dumps us into what I call the core negative feeling. And this is the feeling you do not want to feel. You do not want to feel it, but you felt it many times. Mine is worthless. Yours is probably going to be different. But I dump into that feeling. And when we have that feeling, when we have that core negative feeling of worthless, that only proves to us that we have, i.e. no value, i.e. that we're a loser. Again, we're not using that word in our mind until we identify it. And we dump down to self-destructive behaviors. And again, we know our self-destructive behaviors. You know yours and I know mine, you know? So I do self-destructive behaviors. Well, when I'm doing self-destructive behaviors, now the wheel of fear goes, well, you just better try harder. You just better try harder to have people not see you as a loser. You just better try harder, right? So it keeps me spinning on the wheel, keeps me spinning on the wheel. So once we get activated, what's really cool is you can get off the wheel of fear anywhere. The minute you're activated, you start doing the people pleasing or the bragging or the giving unrealistic deadlines. The minute you start doing that, you go, stop. I'm on my wheel of fear. I am going to move over to my wheel of freedom. Now, what's the wheel of freedom? The wheel of freedom is that part of you that you cut off long ago because it wasn't safe when you were growing up to have this part of you. And by the way, it may not even be about your family or how you were raised or anything like that. Like I said, fears are handed down through our DNA. So it may be, you may not even know why this part of you was not able to bloom. But there's a part of you that you hid away a long time ago. And that is your what I call your essential nature. And my essential nature is authenticity. So Shane, I want you to just think about this for a moment. If I'm afraid at my core, of course, unbeknownst to me, that I'm afraid I'm a loser, do you think being authentic is a good idea?
Sounds hard.
Yeah, it's impossible, right? Now, what did I admire about people growing up? What quotes as a little girl did I write down? It was all about authenticity. But I couldn't do that because it was too dangerous. I couldn't be authentic. How do you be authentic? Because if I'm authentic, everyone's going to know I'm a loser. Be authentic, right? So that's the thing that the Wheel of Freedom calls. It calls you to reclaim that part of yourself that you left behind. So I, in turn, had to practice authenticity. And I didn't even know what that was, right? That's why I did the whole, like, do I like this glass? Do I like this? You know, what's in here? I don't even know what is authentic to me. And then the Wheel of Freedom moves into to proactive behaviors, sense of wholeness, and then self-affirming behaviors. So in proactive behaviors, you have to practice being patient, but self-affirming, you're naturally patient. So when you are living in your flow, you are in self-affirming behaviors. You are on your Wheel of Freedom and you are in your flow. And we want to stay there as much as possible and make the choice when we're on our Wheel of Fear to jump onto our Wheel of Freedom.
Okay. So that's a lot. I tell a story of when I was a teen and into my early 20s, you know, these voices that I wasn't good enough, that, you know, I was less than, that I like some, you're not quite the same, and, you know, just like somehow not capable as, and on and on and on. And in part or mostly, that's what led to a cycle of addiction that further fueled this whole thing. And it was a terrible cycle that I was on this fear. And so as I watch people and observe and see, I guess the question is I think that when I look at human beings, everyone, you know, I see people that just want to know that we're good enough, that we're okay. Yeah. You know, and so I guess my question is, I mean, is that part of the human experience just to wonder if we're good enough? I mean, yes. Tell me about this.
Yes, yes. So fear is part of our neurobiology, period, end of story. And the generic wheel of fear is, am I good enough? Am I good enough? That's the generic one that all of us have. And then what I've done is I've personalized it so it really activates in you. So it really relates to you personally, right? But yes, I have not met a human being alive that does not have the fear in the darkest of nights, in the middle of the night, when their life isn't working out, on some level, they ask some version of, I'm not good enough. And so that causes us to, you know, to make choices, right? And some of us go, you know, I became an alcoholic, you had your addictions. Then some of us, you know, try harder and we become workaholics, right? And it looks better, right? Because we're going to prove our worth. I have one of my coaches works with high net worth individuals. I just talked to her yesterday. I mean, her clients make $100 million a year, okay? Like we're talking loads of money. What is she doing? These guys, mostly guys, some women, want to learn their wheel of fear because they've realized that the way they've lived their life, even though on the outside it's successful, they have relationship issues. They have the same thing. I'm not good enough, even though I've made $100 million. So we all have it. And like I said, it's part of our neurobiology. And so it's not about getting rid of fear. It's about understanding it, seeing it, and working with it and knowing how it operates. Because once you know how it operates, you're no longer tricked by it. So yes, this is, it's part of our neurobiology. We're never going to get rid of it.
So it's more, the more times that we can recognize, I mean, the goal is to recognize that we're in or on this wheel of fear and yeah. move to this wheel of freedom, which sounds a lot more peaceful because now it sounds like I'm doing things that are, yeah. that are affirming my value.
That's right.
To myself.
That's right.
Right? And so, and then as I become, I mean, being over there in the times that we all are in our wheel of fear, it's a pretty destructive cycle. I don't think that we really know that, but it, the things that you're describing, they not only have impact on the way that we believe about ourselves, and that's coming out all over the place.
That's right.
We don't think it is, but it's coming out everywhere to all right. relationships.
That's right.
But
and our children. And our children.
Yeah. It seems like as you move, like the things that you describe in the Wheel of Freedom are things that, you know, allow us to show up better. And really, I think to have the capacity to have better relationships, which we kind of all want that also, I think.
Yeah. And have the right to have them, because when the Wheel of Fear is activated, we don't think we have a right to do that. You know, we don't think we've earned that. We don't think that we can do that, right? But the more that we live on our wheel of freedom, we start accessing that natural state of who we really are. And so then what happens is the wheel, because in the beginning, the wheel of freedom almost feels uncomfortable because I'm like, what, right? But eventually, as we live on our wheel of freedom, the wheel of fear becomes really uncomfortable. You know, like when I'm on my wheel of fear, it's not okay with me anymore. Like that's not okay, right? It's not okay if I judge somebody. It's not okay if I start people pleasing. It's not okay if I lie to get out of something. I mean, the minute I do it, before it even comes out of my mouth, I can feel it, right? And I'm like, stop it as much as I can. Of course, I'm human, so sometimes my wheel of fear gets the best of me too. But the point is that in that moment, you know, I clean it up as soon as I can in order to live on my wheel of freedom. So yeah, so the wheel of fear is activating. We treat each other. I mean, just the way we see the world, the way we treat each other, the way we're seeing each other through our own wheel of fear, right? And I have so many parents come to me and go, I don't want my child to have a wheel of fear. It's like, well, that's impossible. It's part of our neurobiology. The greatest thing you can do for your children is know your wheel of fear. So you learn how to operate it so that you can then educate them and show them how to operate theirs. So you being a good role model on your wheel of freedom will give them the skills to live on their wheel of freedom, right? So yeah, so we're spilling it out all the time. And righteousness, being righteous is a wheel of fear. Thinking you're right is a wheel of fear activity. Because when you are in the wheel of freedom, you're willing to be wrong about everything. You're willing to learn. You're willing to grow. You're open-minded. When you're on your wheel of fear, you're not open-minded. There's got to be an enemy. There's got to be good and bad. There's got to be duality. There's got to be black and white. When you're on your wheel of freedom, you're comfortable in the gray. But on the wheel of fear, you want everything to be black and white. On the wheel of freedom, you're okay. You can live in the paradox. You can live in the gray. You can live in the I don't know. So most of us were raised in the good, bad, black, white, everything needs to be, you know, one way or the other. And that keeps us straitjacketed, that we're on a straitjacket and we're not able to change. We're not able to change our mind because we're so inundated with black and white thinking, with good and bad. So we have to move into this place. So just feelings, for instance, people think, you know, there's feelings, better feelings than other feelings. Feelings are just feelings. There's no good or bad feelings. But let's think of a value, for instance, let's just call it integrity. Well, I don't know anybody who wouldn't like to be called somebody that's, you know, you're an integrous person. Oh, you're so have so much integrity. I don't know anybody that wouldn't like that, right? But when you're on the wheel of fear, living your integrity, that's rigidity. That's keeping promises that no longer serve you. I said I was going to do this, damn it, and I'm going to do it. And you're like, but you're so outgrown that you don't, but you won't stop. You will not change your mind. You will, you're rigid, right? So you stand on, I have integrity. Yeah, based in fear, right? When you're in integrity and freedom, you can actually renegotiate. You can actually think of new solutions. You can actually expand, but on the wheel of fear, you can't.
What do you think about, you're talking a little bit about things that we believe that we should do, and that we believe we have this meaning of what integrity means to us, and we want to have integrity, and yeah. We have these words like, well, I should do this and I shouldn't do that. And I mean, how does a human being even negotiate all that? I mean, it's almost like it's a default that just comes out of us. Like, well, for whatever reason, with all the input I have right now in this position, I think that I should do this, but I didn't do it. And so, I mean, what does that mean about me?
Yes. Yes. So you're asking a fundamental question about, do you trust yourself? You know, what is your decision-making criteria? And so what you're describing is a default decision-making criteria. And a default decision-making criteria, most likely for too many of us, are on the wheel of fear because we're seeking safety. We're doing the thing that we think we should do. We're seeking safety. Well, on the wheel of freedom, we have internal safety. So safety in the world doesn't have the same addiction quality, right? The same need as we do on the wheel of fear. Wheel of fear, we have a huge need to feel safe. And we don't trust ourselves to speak up or stand for ourselves or have enough courage or fortitude or knowledge or communication skills or anything in order to stand up, right? So we succumb and we take the safe place and succumb to the wheel of fear. So we have to, again, as you live on the wheel of freedom, you are going to have new experiences. So I'm going to step back for a minute. Neuroscience says that the only way we can change our lives in any way, shape, or form is through changing our perception. Okay. Well, if your perception is based on the wheel of fear and a story, that's your perception. When you start moving on the wheel of freedom, that opens up a whole new world of perception. And as you start navigating these two worlds and starting to understand, oh, well, this is me on my wheel of freedom, this is on my wheel of fear, your perception starts getting real clarity. You start really understanding how you are and how the world is in fear and freedom. You really start, it gives you peace. It gives you peace because you're no longer sitting there going, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with them? What's wrong? What's wrong? Why? I can't believe it. What should I be doing? It's like, oh, stop. What would you be doing if you were being authentic right now? What would you be doing in this moment if you were living on your wheel of freedom? The answers get really simple. I'm not going to say they're easy to do all the time, but you know the thing that must be done. You know the thing you must say. You know the thing. And many of us know the thing already. We just don't have the courage or the skill to do it. And that's one of the things that I'm fanatical about is the how, because I don't think, I know for me, I would read books and they say, love yourself. And I'd be like, how do you love yourself? Or they'd say, have more confidence. Well, how do you have more confidence? How do you do that? Right. And so I'm a huge how person, you know, in all my books and all my courses, how, because if you do not have the how, I can tell you all day long to be fearless. I can tell you all day long to love yourself. Well, how are you going to do that? And that's why I love your questions, because you're really getting to the how. So yes, with all the information I know right now on my wheel of freedom, on my wheel of fear, I'm going to make one decision. On my wheel of freedom, I'm going to make another decision, and I need to navigate that. And by the way we're wired if we're on automatic pilot and fear is in charge, because when we're on automatic pilot, that's what happens. You're in a present problem. You got a present problem you're trying to figure out. The brain, our whole body, automatically will go into the past to find a solution. It'll go back there to find something that will work in this situation. And then we apply it to the present thinking we're going to get a different future. So the only way to stop that, to change that, is to use our frontal lobe, to use our prefrontal cortex, right? To use the front of our brain. Some people call it the executive brain, executive part of our brain. But to use that takes effort. And it takes slowing down. And when you first start doing it, you're going to get tired. You're going to get really tired. Because to stop and actually think beyond automatic pilot takes effort of the brain and our body, and it's going to burn a whole bunch of calories. And your awareness, because you have to increase your awareness. And again, you have to be willing to be wrong about everything. So if you are looking for evidence to keep your opinion, you're not on your wheel of freedom. You're on your wheel of fear. So we want to be able to think outside the box, think outside of our norm, and use our prefrontal brain so that we can actually go, well, what is true here? What is real? What if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? Right? What if I'm wrong that all these people aren't evil and all that, you know, that they're not trying to get me and, you know, all this is happening? What if I'm wrong? Yeah, what if you are? And that takes great humility, right? And a lot of people won't go to humility. They will not allow themselves to be vulnerable because the wheel of fear has got them by the throat. So in order to live a life of freedom, humility, vulnerability, willingness to say you're sorry, to forgive yourself, to forgive another, are critical skills to keep your heart open.
Wow. That is awesome right there. You've been doing this a little bit. You've said that, you know, at this stage of the game that occasionally, you know, you're sure. Analyzing, but you're getting quick answers. And I guess I wanted to know what is living fearlessly to you? What does that look like? You've been kind of painting a picture, but just kind of open the picture of what's available to me. What does living fearlessly mean to you?
One, that I am here to live a life filled with peace, and that I am on my trajectory of my place in this world, my purpose, my destiny, and that I have the right and the ability to connect with human beings, and that I can give and receive love, you know, without fear, and I can be my authentic self with everyone, everywhere I go. So for me, because my word is authentic, your word might be different, but my word for Essential Nature is authentic. So my whole thing is, you know, can I be authentically me every minute of every day? That's what I want. That's what I want. Right. So, and that's what I attempt to live. Again, not always perfect because I'm human and, you know, we're all human. So, but fearless living to me is really not about jumping out of a plane, which most people automatically think, but it's really just jumping into your life and occupying your own skin and occupying your own life and being in charge of your own destiny and being able to have the courage and the fortitude to go for it.
That is awesome. Super powerful. I love that. Not like jumping out of a plane, jumping into your own life.
Yeah, with two feet, right? Because how many of us feel like we're living somebody else's life? And you know, that nurse, I can't remember the name of the book right now. I think it's called The Top Five Regrets, but she was a hospice nurse and she interviewed people on their deathbed. And she did this for decades. And the number one fear that people had on their deathbed, the number one thing they regret is they didn't live their life. They didn't live their life. They lived a life that was suitable to other people, right? That it was just enough maybe on the edge of they got some of it, but they didn't really live their life. Because I believe that we actually don't even know what we want or what we think because we're so busy inputting so much information. We don't even go into silence. We don't even, you know, go for a walk and don't have any noise on. And what is your brain? What are you saying to yourself? Can you hear your intuition? Can you hear those nudges from spirit? Can you hear those, you know, nudges from, you know, source, God, right? Can you hear those? And then do you have the courage to go do them? You know? Awesome. So that's what I want to do. I want to hear God and I want to act. And when I was in fear, I couldn't hear it, but, and I definitely couldn't act it. And now I hear it and act on it most times. And I would say most all times I'm working on it. Some I can do quicker with more courage, and others are, I have to grow into that. I have to grow into that person. And that's the other benefit of Wheel of Freedom. You have all the patience in the world because this is what life's about.
This is what life's about. This has been an awesome conversation. I could talk, and I'm sure people could listen for hours. They've done it before, and it's just shows that, you know, the, I guess your history of, you know, why you can be and what you've done, how you've done the things that you've done, are so successful at. It's just so inspiring and so powerful. Tell us, Rhonda, last thoughts if you want, and also at just where people can get a hold of you, what you got going on now.
Yeah, thank you so much. I have a free free course that I'd love everyone to go grab, and it's one of my clients' very favorite tools. It's called Stretch, Risk, or Die, and it helps cure procrastination. And it's also going to help you see why you keep getting stuck in certain places. So this tool is, if you have a dream, if you have a goal, if you have something like, oh God, I wish I could write that book. Oh my God, I wish I could, you know, become a coach, or gosh, I wish I could A, B, or C, whatever it is, whether it's love, whether it's career, whether it's family, whatever it is, Stretch, Risk, and Die is going to show you how to do that. And I have, it's 3 15-minute videos, very easy, very simple. It's me speaking to a crowd, so you're going to laugh too. And there's a workbook, there's templates, there's a cheat sheet so that you can use them for whatever issue you have, whether it's finance, like I said, love, et cetera. They're health ones. They're all there for you. And I really encourage you to go and watch those 3 15-minute videos. And on the last video, the last 15-minute video, I actually explain the Wheel of Fear in more detail. So you'll actually get to see it in action. So go do that. You go to fearlessliving.org/risk, R-I-S-K, fearlessliving.org/risk, R-I-S-K. Put your name, your email in there, and you'll get access to the course. And like I said, challenge yourself to do it in the next 24 hours, because as they say, research shows that if you don't do it in the next 24 hours, you're probably never going to do it. So I really highly encourage you to do it. And then last words. This is the thing I wish everybody could hear me say and like take into their hearts and in their marrow and their bones and their cells. If you could just take one thing and just soak it in, is there is nothing wrong with you. It's just fear. There is nothing wrong with you. It is just fear. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just fear.
Rhonda, thank you so much for your time and for your message and for your passion. Appreciate you being with us today. And thank you all for joining us today on the Horsemanship Journey podcast. Remember, you cannot fail if you don't ever stop chasing it.